It's 2 Samuel chapter 17 and 18. As we continue to study the life of David after he has become king, he had sin, he committed murder, he committed adultery, and God pronounced three judgments upon him, that the child that would be born to Bathsheba would die, which it did. Secondly, that there would be the sword in his own family, that is, fighting within his own family, as he had Uriah killed so that there would be killings within his own family. And thirdly, as he took someone else's wife and committed adultery with her, so his wives would be taken. And so far we have seen as Absalom, his son, seduced his half-sister, Amnon, his son, seduced his half-sister Tamar, the sister to Absalom, and Absalom had Amnon killed for it. And he escaped to Geshur, and David grieved for his son to come back, and Joab, who's going to be a prime figure tonight, Joab had been trying to get David to allow his son Absalom to come back, even though Absalom had killed his other son. Well, Joab had the woman from Tekoa come and present a story to David that she had two sons and one killed the other, and the family tried to kill the surviving son who committed the murder, but that she would ask David if he would declare leniency and protection for the one who committed the murder so that her family line would continue, which David did. And of course she turned the story around on him and said, "So you have done to Israel by not allowing Absalom, your son, to come back." And so he agreed to allow Absalom to come back, and Absalom was allowed to come back to Israel, but he was not allowed to see the king. At which time Absalom sent two messages to Joab, the commander-in-chief of David's armies, about seeing David. He wanted an audience with his father, but his father wouldn't see him, and Joab would not respond to his messages. So Absalom burned the fields of Joab to try to get his attention. Joab says, "What'd you do that for?" He says, "Well, you didn't answer me, so I had to get your attention." Right then and there. Now, Joab's responsible for working behind the scenes to get Absalom to come back. All of a sudden, Joab's beginning to change his mind at that point. It's like, who is this guy? He burns your field if you don't answer him. He murders his half-brother. He burns my fields down. What kind of a character do we have going here? Anyway, he said he wanted to see his father, so he got him an audience with his father, David. And when Absalom and David got back together again, David fell on him and kissed him and welcomed him back. But in the meantime, after things have kind of patched up between David and his son Absalom, Absalom began to maneuver and subvert the kingship of David. He would sit at the gate, and as people would come to see David for their problems, he would say, "Turn in here, let me solve your problems for you. In fact, matter of fact, if you let me be judge of Israel, I will make decisions for you in the issue." And so he began to undermine David's authority as king, until David got word that Absalom had many hundreds of people now behind him, and that he was about ready to attack the city of Jerusalem, because he had gone to Hebron to make a sacrifice, and he took 200 people with him. And then he said, at the sound of the trumpet, say that Absalom reigns as king. And so the word got back to David and said, Absalom's about ready to attack the city, and he's got a tremendous amount of support. So David takes the women and children and people of the city, and he leaves. And Absalom comes in, and he takes over the city. He finds them gone. So he now takes over, supposedly as he thinks, the throne, because his father had run. But now David's got the women and children with him, and you have to understand that. He is only a one night's journey away. He's trying to cross the River Jordan and get onto the other side, but he's got all these women and children with him. He's trying to protect them. He's trying to keep from having to fight his own son. He's trying to keep from the city of Jerusalem from being torn down. He takes this way out. Now, this doesn't mean that he's given up. This is a very smart move. He does not know what he's dealing with here. So instead of going head-to-head with his son, he leaves the city. Absalom shows up with his people, finds the city vacant, and takes over the city. Now, David does two things. He sends the priest, Zadok, and Abiathar back to Jerusalem with the Ark of the Covenant. It says, this, the Ark of the Covenant of God belongs back in Jerusalem. We're not going to have it out here with us. And you priests go back, and then as you serve as priests, send messages to me as to what's going on. So he's got, actually, he sends the two priests back, and they are now David's spies. Now, there's another fellow by the name of Ahithophel, who is one of David's counselors, a very wise man, who defected and went with Absalom because he saw that Absalom is now taken over. So he figures, I'm going to go with whoever's in charge. So he defects and he goes over to Absalom, and Absalom now uses Ahithophel as one of his counselors. But then David also sends back with him to Absalom Hushai, which is actually Cushai in Hebrew, but Hushai, who is another one of his counselors. But David sends Hushai back and says, go join Absalom and become one of his counselors and go against all the counsel that Ahithophel gives him. Now this guy Hushai is very intelligent. We'll see him in a moment. In the meantime, while Hushai is coming back, Ahithophel tells Absalom, here's what you ought to do. Go into David's concubines openly, publicly, in front of the whole city, and that is your declaration that you're taking over your father's throne because you are taking possession of his concubines. See, that's in fulfillment of the judgment in chapter 12, that his own wives would be taken, and openly and publicly, not privately, adultery would be committed against his own wives. And so he takes the concubines, and he takes the wives, and he openly and publicly goes into them in front of everybody and declares them his, and so he has taken over his father's throne. Now we come to chapter 17. Moreover, Ahithophel, we're going to study in the verses 1 through 4, the counsel or advice of Ahithophel concerning David. Ahithophel said to Absalom, now let me choose 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and weak and make him afraid. And all the people who are with him will flee, and I will strike only the king. Then I will bring back all the people to you. When all return except the man whom you seek, all the people will be at peace. And the saying pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. So he says, give me 12,000 men. I'll attack, but I will only kill David, the king. And I'll bring everybody else back. Once they see that he is dead, I'll bring everybody else back, and everybody's going to be at peace. Just the one person that you're seeking, that's the person who's going to die. He kind of messed up a little bit here, and it was pleasing to Absalom and the elders, but he left out some things that Cushai is going to appeal. He's going to counter this. This sounded pretty good to Absalom and all the elders. Then Absalom said, now in verses 5 to 14 we have the advice and counsel of Cushai. And Absalom said, now call Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear what he says too. And when Hushai came to Absalom, Absalom spoke to him, saying, Ahithophel has spoken in this manner. Shall we do as he says? If not, speak up. So Hushai said to Absalom, the advice that Ahithophel has given is not good at this time. For, said Hushai, you know your father and his men, that they are mighty men, and they are enraged in their minds like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. And your father is a man of war and will not camp with the people. So now, Hushai presents a totally different picture. What Ahithophel painted was that David and the people are weary and weak and scared. And that they were going to pick out David and kill him only. Just give me 12,000 men. Well, Hushai, the picture that he paints is that, first of all, they are not afraid. David and his men are experienced warriors. They are valiant men. Plus the fact they're very angry, like a mother bear being separated from her cubs out in the field. They are enraged. They are so angry. And plus the fact, David being such an experienced soldier, he knows not to sleep with the rest of the people in the camp. So he says, if you attack the camp, he won't be there. And then once he hears that you attack the camp, he'll disappear. So he's saying Ahithophel's counsel will not work. Now, as we continue on, please notice that Hushai is appealing to two things. He's a very, very smart man. He'd be called an oracle. He's a very wise man. He's going to appeal to two things that Ahithophel did not appeal to, as far as Absalom comes. Number one, fear. If you can make Absalom scared, that'll affect his decision making. Secondly, Ahithophel did not appeal to Absalom's ego. In fact, Ahithophel said, just give me the 12,000 men and I'll go down and we'll take care of it. Absalom says, hey, that sounds like a good idea. But not Hushai. He's going to appeal, says, you go down, Absalom. Round up the entire nation. We're not talking about 12,000 people. We're talking about the entire nation. Round everybody up. And everybody go down and just wipe them out and you take the glory for it. Oh, wow. You know. First of all, fear, because Ahithophel's plan won't work. And the 12,000 men are going to fall into big trouble because you're coming up against an experienced army and an experienced military man in David. And they're mad and they're angry. And you know, they're experienced warriors. And you had better watch it. He goes, oh, yeah. Guess it's not going to be that easy, is it? Plus the fact, if you round everybody up in the nation and you go down and you do it, the people will follow you as king because you'll have the glory for this military battle. So, you know, fear on one side and ego on the other. Oh, this is going to make much more sense to him. Verse 9. Surely by now he is hidden in some pit, he's speaking of David, or in some other place. And it will be that when some of them are overthrown at the first, that whoever hears it will say, there is a slaughter amongst the people who follow Absalom. And even he who is valiant, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will melt completely. For all of Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and those who are with him are valiant men. So he says, look, if all of a sudden your men come up against him and they start getting slaughtered, all of a sudden your other people are going to hear about it and they're going to kind of lose confidence in you. You don't want that. Therefore, verse 11, I advise that all of Israel be fully gathered to you, from the tribe of Dan to Beersheba, like the sand that is by the sea for a multitude, and that you go to battle in person. So we will come upon him in some place where he may be found, and we will fall on him as the dew falls on the ground. And of him and all the men who are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he has withdrawn into a city, then all of Israel shall bring ropes to that city, and we will pull it into the river, until there is not one small stone that is not even a pebble found there. So Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the advice of Hushai the Archite is better than the advice of Ahithophel. So he said, now you're making sense. But I want you to notice what's happening here. First of all, Hushai is stalling for time. If Ahithophel takes off with 12,000 men and David has just only a night's journey away, he's going to catch him. Hushai advises that he call for all the nations, all of the nation to come. That's going to take a whole lot of time. And so he says, now this makes sense. And then after we gather everybody together, I will lead them. We'll overcome this mighty army with all of our tens of thousands. They won't even have a chance, even though they're a mighty army, mighty warriors and soldiers. And so they said, hey, this makes sense. But notice what the rest of verse 14 says. For Yahweh had purposed to defeat the good advice of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring disaster on Absalom. The word translated in our text, purposed, is the word established or commanded. The Lord established that the advice of Hushai would cancel out the advice of Ahithophel because the Lord had already purposed and intended that disaster should come upon Absalom. The word disaster is the word usually translated evil. It is also translated adversity. So evil and adversity is going to happen to Absalom, and God has purposed it. He planned it. He commanded it. What the last part of verse 14 tells us is that whatever man's plans are, whatever man's devices are, that the sovereign plan and purpose of God is going to overrule, no matter what. God already established that adversity was going to come upon Absalom. And when he took Hushai's advice, he was sealing his fate. Verse 15. Verses 15 through 22, they now send word to David. See, they've stalled for time. Absalom is rounding up the rest of the people of the nation Israel, and now they're going to send the spies out. You remember Zadok and Abiathar, the priests? Well, notice verse 15. Then Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, thus and so Ahithophel advised Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus and so I have advised. Now therefore send quickly and tell David, saying, do not spend this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily cross over, lest the king and the people who are with him be swallowed up. Now Jonathan and Ahimaaz stayed at En-Rogel, for they dared not be seen coming into the city. Now these are two people who were sons to the priest who were actually outside of the city, and they were used to go back and forth to bring messages to David. As the priest would give them the messages, they would go, and then they would come back, and they would hide outside the city until this young girl would go out to them. You see, the young girl would take the messages from the priest, go tell these two young men who were the sons of the priest. They would go out into the wilderness and tell David what's going on and come back and wait for more. But they wouldn't dare come into the city, you see. There's kind of a little shuttle program here to help David out. So, Jonathan and Ahimaaz stayed at En-Rogel, for they dared not be seen coming into the city. So a female servant would come and tell them, and they would go and tell King David. Nevertheless, a young man saw them and told Absalom. But both of them went away quickly and came to a man's house in Bahurim, who had a well in his court, and they went down into it, that is, into the well. Then the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and spread ground grain upon it. And the thing was not known. In other words, they couldn't tell a well was there. She put ground grain on top, and it looked like they were harvesting and their crops there, and they were hiding down in the well. And when Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house, they said, we are Ahimaaz and Jonathan. So the woman said to them, they have gone, oh, where are they? That's the question. They have gone over the water brook. And when they had searched and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. Now it came to pass after they had departed that they came up out of the well and went and told King David and said to David, Arise and cross over the water quickly, for thus has Ahithophel advised against you. So David and all the people who were with him arose and crossed over the Jordan. By morning light, not one of them was left who had not gone over the Jordan. He picked up quickly and went over the river Jordan. And we will see in a moment, as we get down to verse 24, he's going to hold up in a city called Mahanaim, across the river Jordan, a walled city. And so he's crossed over, he's in the walled city, he has protection like a fortress around him, and they have now made it across the river. But verse 23, a sad thing happens to Ahithophel. He commits suicide. Remember, he's the one that gave the advice to begin with that was turned down by Absalom. He did not commit suicide because his advice was not taken. But notice this, verse 23. Now when Ahithophel saw that his advice was not followed, he saddled a donkey and arose and went home to his house, to his city. Then he put his household in order. Literally in the Hebrew, he gave commandment to his household what should be done. And hanged himself and died. And he was buried in the tomb of his father. Ahithophel committed suicide because his advice or counsel was not followed. It wasn't because he was rejected, but because his advice was not followed. Because his advice was not followed, he knew the revolt would not work. He knew that David would have the upper hand. He knew David was getting... There's a reason why Ahithophel gave his advice. Go now, let's go, tonight. I can overtake him. We'll take him. Kill King David, bring everybody else back. But it has to be tonight. When they, under God's intention, took the counsel of Cushai, they gave David time. And, you know, Ahithophel says, that's it, we've had it. You don't get him now. This guy is brilliant. A brilliant warrior. And he already knew the revolt would not work, and if David would win, he would come after Ahithophel and kill him. So Ahithophel just killed himself. But beginning of verse 24, going through verse 29, two things happen in preparation for this battle that is about ready to take place. Verse 24, from 24 to 26, the people involved and their positioning. Then David went to Mahanaim, and Absalom crossed over the Jordan, he and all the people of Israel with him. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the army instead of Joab. This Amasa was the son of a man whose name was Jithra, an Israelite, who had gone into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister of Zeruiah, Joab's mother. So if you want to get all of this straight, Amasa was the cousin to Absalom and the nephew to David. He's a relative, if you think any of this is relative. And verse 26, so Israel and Absalom encamped in the land of Gilead. So there they are camped. David's inside the city. Absalom has now crossed over the river to come after them, and they are now camped in Gilead. Verses 27 to 29 tells us that, you know, you remember that David has been establishing relationships. He's been marrying the different daughters of the different kings from the surrounding nations. David, very smart man, he's been developing relationships. Absalom was outside the gate maneuvering himself by telling people, I'll make decisions for you if you vote for me, type of a thing. That's not establishing relationships. People do not have confidence in people like that. David established relationships. So now these kings of these countries, now that he's held up in the city, these rich kings give provision to David and his men. Verse 27, now it came to pass that when David had come to Mahanaim, that Shovi, the son of Nahash, from Rabbah of the people of Ammon, Machir, the son of Amiel, from Lodibar. Machir was the friend of Jonathan, Mephibosheth, who was the son of Jonathan, who was the son to Saul. So there's kind of a connection here that when David was good to Mephibosheth, Mephibosheth's friend, this king, Machir, probably was helped too. And Barzillai, the Gileadite from Rogalim. They brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched grain and beans and lentils and parched seeds, honey and curds, sheep and cheese of the herd, for David and the people who were with him, for them to eat. For they said, "The people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness." So they gave provision for them while they were there. Now, chapter 18, verses 1 through 5. David now sends the warriors out. And David numbered the people who were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. Then David sent out a third of the people under the hand of Joab, a third of the people under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and a third under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. Remember him? He's the mercenary that David tried to get him to turn back when they left the city, and he says, "Nope, I'm staying with you." So he says, a loyal person, willing to die with him, whatever it takes. Give him a third of the people. So these three leaders, the people, are broken up into thirds and put under the command of these three men. And the king said to the people, "I will surely go out with you myself," true king and a true warrior. But the people answered, "You shall not go out, for if we flee away, they will not care about us, nor if half of us die will they care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us now, for you are now more help to us in the city." Then the king said to them, "Whatever seems best to you, I will do." So the king stood beside the gate, and all the people went out by the hundreds and by thousands. Now the king had commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, saying, "Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom." Catch this now. This chapter has a tremendous teaching to it. Treat him gently. One thing, David seems to be assured of victory. And secondly, he doesn't want anything to happen to Absalom. You know what this chapter shows about the side of David, and I don't mean this in criticism as far as condemnation. It is a tremendous help to us. In this chapter, we're going to see the response of David and the response of Joab. David says, "Don't let anything happen to Absalom. Whatever you do when you're fighting against him, and by the way, he's out to kill us, don't let anything happen to him. Treat him gently. Be easy on him." That's a problem. That is a problem. And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains orders concerning Absalom. And now the battle itself is just three verses long. Notice the battle. So the people went out into the field of battle against Israel, and the battle was in the woods of Ephraim. Verse 7 tells us, just one verse that tells us the end of the battle here. The people of Israel were overthrown there before the servants of David, and a great slaughter of 20,000 took place there that day. And again about the countryside, for the battle there was scattered over the face of the whole countryside, and the woods devoured more people that day than the sword could devour. So that it was fought under rough terrain, and the woods devoured more people than were killed. People started running back into the woods away from David's army, and the forest killed them. They got lost and killed by various things in the forest, as well as people who were killed by the sword. Now, that's all there was of the battle. Obviously, the whole point of presenting these scriptures is not the battle itself. There's no details about the battle. That's it, three verses. This whole chapter is David and Joab's response to Absalom. That's what it's all about. Look at the death of Absalom, verses 9 to 15. Then Absalom met the servants of David. Absalom rode on a mule. The mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak tree, and his head caught in the oak. So he was left hanging between heaven and earth, and the mule which was under him went on. It's kind of like what you see in some of those old movies where somebody's riding under a tree and then all of a sudden gets hit by a tree limb and falls off his horse. Only Absalom is caught in the tree. And somebody suggested, it's not in the text, but you can imagine something along these lines, because you remember he cut his hair and waited every year. Some people think that he went under the oak tree and got his hair caught up in the branches, and it was so thick that it just caught and just pulled him right off the donkey, and he's hanging there out of the tree. Well, it says his head got caught in the tree, and he's just hanging there by the head. And the mule rides right out from underneath him, just keeps right on going. And Absalom is just hanging there in this tree. Now a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, "I just saw Absalom hanging in an oak tree." So Joab said to the man who told him, "You just saw him? Why did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a belt." There's a great reward here. Why didn't you kill him? But the man said to Joab, "Though I were to receive 1,000 pieces of silver in my hand, I would not raise my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, saying, 'Beware lest anyone touch the young man Absalom.' Otherwise I would have dealt falsely against my own life, for there is nothing hidden from the king, and you yourself would have set yourself against me." So what he's saying here is, no, I heard King David tell you commanders not to touch this one, to take it easy on him. Now, if I were to kill him, I'd be going against the king, and I know he finds out everything. And he would send you out against me and say, "Okay, kill that guy because he touched my son when I said not to touch him." So the guy says, "No way, I wasn't going to kill him." Then Joab said, look at verse 14, "I cannot linger with you." And he took 3 spears. Now the word spears in Hebrew is literally the word sticks. And there's a reason why I'm emphasizing the literals, because it wasn't Joab and his 3 spears that killed him. It was the 10 men that were with him. The spears were symbolic. These sticks were symbolic in that Joab would jab Absalom, and then the 10 men would thrust him with spears and kill him. So he took 3 sticks in his hand and thrust them through Absalom's heart, not really he, but in a mimicking way, while he was still alive in the midst of the oak tree. And 10 young men who bore Joab's armor surrounded Absalom and struck and killed him. So in a symbolic gesture to show these 10 young men, he took the sticks and pointed to the heart, thrusting into the heart, and the 10 young men surrounded Absalom and thrust him through and killed him. The call for the end of the battle, verses 16 to 18. So Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing Israel, for Joab held back the people. And they took Absalom and cast him into a large pit in the woods, and laid a very large heap of stones over him. Then all of Israel fled, everyone to his tent. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up a pillar for himself, which is in the king's valley. For he said, "I have no son to keep my name in remembrance." He called the pillar after his own name, and to this day it is called Absalom's Monument. Now what Joab had done is, in mockery, because Absalom had set up a monument in his own name, Joab built a monument for him too of stones. He said, "Throw him in the pit, we'll make our own monument for him. He wants a monument, he's got it." So it was in mockery to the monument that Absalom had built. Now there's quite a difference, and we're going to see this develop as we continue to go through here. David wants to take it easy on Absalom. Joab says, I've had it. If we go through this again, if Absalom lives through this one and he's brought back, he's going to keep doing this. He is a threat to our nation. Look what he's already done. This guy is rotten to the core through and through. He cannot live. He's saying David is just a softy. He's emotional because it's his son, and he doesn't realize that the entire nation of Israel is in danger because of this guy. He's dead. Joab could not put up with it. You see the two approaches. One approach is emotional. The other approach is, this is what needs to be done. The messengers are sent, verses 19 to 23. And Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. Now remember, he's one of the two men that were out in the wilderness that brought messages to David. He's one of the sons. He's the son of Zadok, the priest. Then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said, let me run now and take the news to the king how the Lord has avenged him of his enemies. And Joab said to him, you shall not take the news this day, for you shall take the news another day, but today you shall take no news because the king's son is dead. Then Joab said to the Cushite. Now the Cushite was an African slave from the area of Cush, which is just right near Egypt. So Joab said to the Cushite, go tell the king what you have seen. So the Cushite bowed himself to Joab and ran. And then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said again to Joab, but whatever happens, please let me also run after the Cushite. So Joab said, why will you run, my son, since you have no news ready? But whatever happens, he said, let me run. And, you know, the principle here is that Joab says, you don't know what's going on. You don't have any news to tell him. And he says, let me run anyway. There are a lot of people that want to run and be messengers. I want to run and go tell the message, and they don't have anything to say. He says, you don't have anything to say. You don't know what you're talking about. I already sent a messenger, so just cool it. He says, no, I want to go. So he says to them, so he said to him, then run. Then Ahimaaz ran by the way of the plain and outran the Cushite. He outran him. Better shape. Getting ready for the Olympics. Plus the fact, you know what happened to these messengers that came, you know, and told David about Saul's death and, you know, the man that wanted to be the big shot and bring the good news, and David had him put to death. So, you know, maybe Joab was doing him a favor. No, you don't want to be the messenger to go tell the king that his son was killed against his orders. Why would anybody want to go tell the king that, see? But Ahimaaz wanted to be the one. I want to be the one to tell the king, you know, that his enemies have been avenged. Yeah, but you don't understand, his son died today, so you don't have the whole story, you know. He's going to ask about his son and you don't know, so you stay here, I'll send the Cushite. He says, no, let me go anyway. Well, go ahead. If you want to go, you go. So he outran the Cushite. Now verses 24 to 32, David is told of the death of his son. Now David was sitting between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof over the gate, to the wall, lifted his eyes and looked, and there was a man running alone. And the watchman cried out and told the king, and the king said, if he is alone, there is news in his mouth. And he came rapidly and drew near. Then the watchman saw another man running, and the watchman called to the gatekeeper and said, there is another man running alone. And the king said, he also brings news. So the watchman said, I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And remember, they know him because he brought messages to them before. And the king said, he is a good man and comes with good news. So he's on our side. We know he can be trusted, and that's good news. And you know that King David is sitting there not only waiting to hear about the war, He doesn't even want... We'll see that he's going to ask the messenger. He doesn't even care about the war. What about my son? And you can tell that just by the runners that are coming, David's already saying, oh, this is good news. If he comes, it's good news. This is a good man. He's coming with good news. You can tell David's been sitting there at the gate, all emotional over his son Absalom. Verse 28, so Ahimaaz called out and said to the king, all is well. Then he bowed down with his face to the earth before the king and said, blessed is the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king. And the king says, is the young man Absalom safe? Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant, and me your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I did not know what it was about. So basically, all of a sudden he realizes why he should not have come. The king says, what about, okay, you brought me news about the war. I didn't even ask about that. Just tell me, is Absalom safe? Well, you know, I saw something happening, but I don't really know what happened. All of a sudden he realizes, yeah, what am I? And the king said, turn aside and stand over here. So he turned aside and stood still. Just then the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, there is good news, my lord the king, for the Lord has avenged you this day of all those who rose against you. And the king said to the Cushite, is the young man Absalom safe? So the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise against you to do harm be like that young man. He realizes, I mean, just the way the Cushite said it, he knew that Absalom was dead. Verse 33, then the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he was speaking this way, oh, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. The moral of the story, and it doesn't say, and we'll see later on that it was right, and starting next week as we get into chapter 19, David comes back to Jerusalem and takes his throne back, but it also shows us the wisdom of what David learned in all of this. One thing for sure, as I pointed out in this chapter, and we'll get into it in the next week to 2 weeks in this study, is that Absalom was emotional over his son and couldn't do what was necessary. Joab realized, starting way back when Absalom was returned and he burned his fields, this guy is trouble. He's going to try to kill his father. He's going to try to take the throne. He's going to try to take over the nation. All David could do is weep and get emotional over his son. He wanted to keep him safe. He wanted this whole thing. He wanted to get everything back together again, try to work things out. And Joab knew that is impossible. Even against the king's orders, Joab had him killed. Absalom killed. It had to be. There could be no reconciliation. This man was evil through and through. And David was emotional and couldn't make correct decisions. Joab had him killed. Nothing will happen to Joab. Nothing will happen to these people because of the death of Absalom, because David is going to realize that it was necessary. It had to be. But just in these two responses, it teaches us about our own selves. We can be like David. We can be a military person. We can be strong. Remember how David would have certain people put to death if they were to violate God's word or violate the law. He would have them put to death. But when it came to his own son, he couldn't do it. He kept giving them break after break after break, and it just meant more trouble and more trouble. And if David was the only one put out, if he was the only one out in the wilderness, that's one thing. But the entire city had to move and be on the run just because of what was going on between David and Absalom. And Joab says, this can't continue. We can't take him back to his father and have him reunite and say, have Absalom say, I'm sorry, and then start this whole thing all over again. The man is just evil. He will not change. So he killed him. And the message to us, as we already know, how emotions and emotional reactions and emotional decisions can be wrong. Jesus said, beware, because your enemies are those of your own household. When Satan strikes, he's not fair. And a lot of times he enters into that emotional realm where we've got to make strong decisions and when we've got to stand on God's word and be obedient to God's word. And it might come, and probably will, since those are the closest people to us, the people we live with, the people our relatives, our friends, the people we work with, whatever the case may be. We've got to be obedient to God's word. We've seen it many times in this church where people have had made spiritual decisions and commitments to Christ, and then the emotional got the best of them, and they had to compromise for the emotional and not be obedient to God's word because of the emotional factor. And evil creep right back in again, and evil take over, and sin take over again. David will learn the wisdom of it all, and we will learn those lessons in verses 19 and 20 as we continue next week, as David has returned to the throne, and we learn some of these things that he has learned. But that's the basis of the wisdom that David has learned through this whole process. He's mourning for his son. Normal, natural. But just because the person is your son, you cannot keep endangering your life and the entire nation of Israel just to keep giving them a break when he himself has declared war against his own father. They must be spiritual decisions, not emotional decisions. And it seems hard. And even Joab's willing to say, okay, I made a mistake. I wanted to see Absalom and his dad get back together again for the sake of Israel. But that's wrong. It's not a father-son thing. It's not an emotional thing. It's not a family thing. It's a spiritual thing.